the statues, rain on learning idle masses. Suture of the patience of this messy house. We'll mimic both the pages of this burial ground. Suture of the patience of this messy house. We'll mimic both the pages of this burial ground. Of this burial ground, we'll mimic both the pages of this burial ground.
All right, and we are back. It's time for sports, some more sports, and we're joined by our resident sports expert and prognosticator, Hangtime Eric.
How's it going, Hangtime?
Calling in from Austin, Texas.
Hey guys, how are we doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Good?
Oh, we're doing great, yeah.
Okay, very good. Good to be here today.
And we have a jam.
Good to be here with you.
Absolutely, and it's great to have you. We have a jam-packed schedule, just like the sports world has been in recent weeks. We have had NBA playoffs finals. We are in the midst of an MLB playoff series. The WNBA had their playoffs. We have golf going. We have college football. We have NFL. It's like sports overload right now. I remember back in June, Hangtime Eric, you were hoping, dying for the most basic of sensory input from sports. You wanted to watch a 9-inning baseball game. How many of those did you watch?
I've been watching a little bit of the playoffs. Over the summer, I probably watched 10 baseball games. The playoffs have been pretty exciting. I was watching that the Dodgers game. You know, one night was 1-1 that went into extra innings. And then the final score ended up being 2-1 in like 15 innings. What a snoozer that was. And then the following day, the Dodgers scored 14 runs in the first inning. So that's baseball in a nutshell.
Oh, that Reds game, that Reds Braves game that went 15 innings with zero scoring.
Was it, maybe that's, is that what I'm, that's, that is what I'm thinking of. I'm sorry. Yes, there was no scores, right? Yeah.
0-1, 16th inning or something.
Yeah,
it was insane.
Well, you know, at first I was excited about the Reds making the playoffs, and then I was like, half of the league made the playoffs this year. So it felt a little less special, but and then they got swept anyways. So, but yeah, I don't know. The Astros, their deciding game is tonight.
Craig
Biggio against the Rays. I obviously have a lot of Astro friends, and I, you know, they're like, what were the consequences of them cheating? Like, did anything happen?
So for the players, not really. The players kind of, they got a slap on the wrist. It was the managers. The managers took the fall, but you know, for coming forward and everything, the players got off. And the players get the shame and the hatred of the league and of all of the baseball fans. They're hanging their heads, and they get to be the heels, though. This is going to be exciting. If they do make it in the playoffs, they get to be the heels. And, you know, you're hoping for the Dodgers, I think. You know, they're one of these national teams. It's like rooting for the Lakers or the Yankees. You know, the Dodgers are an historic like, you know, televised nationally, that kind of thing. But you want them to get their revenge because they're the ones that the Astros beat them to win the World Series by cheating, by being cheating cheaters.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, hopefully they won't get there. I would, of the four teams that are left, I would like the Rays to go. Rays, Braves, I'm fine with that. The Dodgers, to me, are like the, you know, they're like the 21st century, like, I mean, how often are they in the playoffs? It seems like they're what the Yankees were in the early 2000s and late 90s.
Frequently. Okay, so you're not going storyline. You're calling for, like, maximum chaos and carnage at the national media level. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck your national teams. I want to see the teams that nobody wants right. in here. I want to see the Braves and the Rays.
Right.
Like,
right.
teams with terrible markets. I can appreciate that. As a Bengals fan, we're always getting shit on by the national media. So, you know, you got to root for the small market teams, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of money with the Dodgers.
I want the Titans and the Bills in the Super Bowl.
Jacksonville. I want the Jacksonville Super Bowl.
The Panthers.
Jacksonville, Tennessee.
But they've got Dusty Baker's in Houston now. I don't know. I guess they're trying to turn things around down there with that. I feel like I've gone on the record. I don't follow baseball too much. I follow all playoffs though, just because I like sports. But football is the only one that I can really keep up with the regular season because all of their games are really done in a day or two.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch all the scores, and I'm not, you know, if I'm around, I'll watch it, but you know, I can't watch NBA 5 nights a week or baseball 5 days a week or whatever. Even if I did have that time, it's just, you know, there's so much consumption media. I'm, you know, between that and streaming movies and mm-hmm. music and podcasts and books and my wife and my life, you know, you've only got so much time for all of these things. So it's a fine balance, but, you know, every October you make room for, I guess, the NBA playoffs this year and then baseball. Watch the playoffs.
Ah, that proud October tradition, the NBA playoffs. That thing we look forward to. It's so crazy right now. Did you see, there was a Thursday night game of football, and it was the first time in like American sports history that there was an NFL game, an MLB game, an NBA game, a WNBA game, and a college football game all happening on, and an MLS game all happening on the same day.
Wow.
First time. And NHL. Like every single major sport had a game on the same day.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, hopefully we won't that again next year, right?
I don't know. There's a lot of
that's
bets.
Right, because
a lot of betting out there, isn't there? If all those games are going on, if you bet smaller but on more games, maybe there's more chances to win big.
Your parlays with your just some crazy parlays of like a 10 team win across a 10 team money line win across 5 different sports or 6 different sports. Got the Galaxy, the Jets
losing.
Yeah,
but that was a fun week.
The Braves winning, the Heat winning, and
I cut deep. I kind of fell in love with that Heat team.
You like them?
I really enjoyed them. Granted, I'm a big listener of the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gotts, and they're based in Miami, and it's more of a comedy sports show. But yeah, they swung me over watching the Heat. I'm gonna say I'm not the biggest basketball fan. I like turn-based games like football and baseball in general. But I got to say, like the NBA right now is just, I don't know if I've ever seen a basketball played like that. It was just on the next level. I think the bubble and them not having fans, I didn't think it hurt them. I kind of enjoyed it that way. I was watching some of those games, and I'm not even that big of like a NBA follower, but I was hooked. Mm-hmm. Because the big video boards, and the pace of play, you know, he had clean sight lines. There were like teams scoring like 150 in these playoff games. Mm-hmm. It was nuts. Like defense was out the window. You know, the game's just changed so much where it's like 3 points or bust.
Right. It doesn't seem like anything else is really it doesn't seem like any other sports are. Advancing in a level that the NBA is, I feel like if anything else, the NFL is doing quite the opposite, actually. Because with basketball, there's nothing really that's going to, like, confine the way that it's played. You know, like, there's, you know, with football, it all began with the helmet-to-helmet contact. And I don't know about you guys, but the flags in the NFL have gotten completely out of control for me. And it's just, it takes away so much fun and rhythm of the game. And, you know, basketball is paced enough to where, you know, a foul doesn't really slow down. Oh, we're going to take a commercial break. There was, you know, a, mm-hmm. we're going to review that play.
Yeah, it takes them a minute to review it.
So,
a lot of times in football, it's like really big game changers, like that can really sway the whole game. Those fouls and stuff. Just a 10-yard penalty at the right spot might be the matter of a touchdown or not. And 7 points is big, and in football compared to basketball.
Pass interference. Mm-hmm. It could be 30 yards. It could be 50 yards. It's like, you know, like, okay, they were not in field goal range, and now some bullshit pass interference call. Now they're going to win the game because of a disputable flag.
Well, that Chargers-Bengals game, AJ Green in the end zone.
Yeah, exactly.
That gave the Chargers the game. Right?
Yep.
And then Fat Randy eating too many cheeseburgers the night before, too much cholesterol pulling up in his leg, made him cramp up.
He didn't really get a whole lot of, that was inconsequential, I guess, huh?
that was very consequential.
Yeah.
Before we move on fully to the NFL, I think that's kind of what everyone really loves. That's America's true pastime. But let's go back to the MLB real quick. What did you make of that Tom Brenneman incident?
I think he's been doing this for almost 20 years. It's been like, all right. So you've been to like concerts and you've seen people like show up. Show up late. Like, where is this band? You know, you're a performer. This guy, to an extent, is a performer. Considering what his job is, I consider performers and people that make a living doing things like that of the 0.05% of the people that have the luxury to do this thing for a living. They've got, in my opinion, the keys to the castle, you know? And it's like, man, you should be much more of a professional about what you're doing. And I think that it's unfortunate. I don't think he'll recover from it. I don't think he'll go back to... If he were in New York, or if he were in Los Angeles, or if he were in Seattle, he would be out without a question. I almost feel like in Cincinnati, they may be a little more forgiving, I guess, considering how, I mean, it didn't really do much to Marge Schott when she went through all of that in the 90s. Like, I guess the political climate was different, but the social climate was different. But I think that he'll go through sensitivity training and probably have some LGBTQT charity foundation on the other side of this, and he'll never recover from it. I think that had it happened 5 years ago, or maybe even 5 years from now, he would recover from it. You know, we're getting a little bit out of this, like, I don't know, like canary in the coal mine sort of situation of like, These are the first people that have to fall off this cliff. The Louis C.K.'s, the people that are getting canceled. I don't mean to dismiss it at all, but we're going to get out on the other side of this where like political correctness has corrected itself a little bit and come back in, because the issue right now is that this guy is 60 something years old, and like he has to, you know, the problem with this is what can guys like him do to get back to having a normal life? Or is that, you know, if I were to go out and murder somebody this weekend and I do 20 years in prison, I've done my time. I can come back in. I can be integrated back into the world again. That doesn't seem to work for a lot of these people. Like, you know, Kramer's never going to recover from his, you know, incident. Michael Richards, you know, like...
Did you guys see that... that made-up article where Screech was murdered in prison and everybody was freaking out online that Screech was dead and that he was murdered in prison? It's like Screech is never going to get away from people always making pranks about him. He's always going to be Screech.
Yeah. I mean, you know...
Kevin Spacey is always going to be a child
molester. He fucked up the obvious part of his job, you know? If Bill Romito can go 30 years without getting in a car accident, he's the driver. That's his job. He's got a perfect record. And, you know, there's no reason Marty Brenneman shouldn't be able to do it. Stakes are... You know, Bill Romito's an essential worker, but I think that, you know, Marty Brenneman's the voice of the... I'm sorry, not Marty. Tom Brenneman.
Tom Brenneman.
He's the voice of the Reds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to allow him to come back. I think that it is... You know, there is just this weird timeline of... We will get out of this, and I think that people will learn, but I think right now we're still in the midst of this, cancel culture on everything. There's absolutely some, validity to it, but I do think you have to give people a chance to, learn from their mistakes and get back to having a normal fucking life. But that being said, there's not a single word that, you know, considering my sexual orientation or my race, there's nothing like that has that sort of effect on a white guy like me. So a straight white guy like me. So I can't really relate to a lot of that. I think that it's like how
Trump tried to get away with his locker room talk or something. Like when people are always like, guys, straight guys have this locker room talk. I don't really see it too much. It's not like all guys go around saying fag or pussy and stuff all the time, but I feel like somebody like Trump or something's like advocating that all guys go out there and are talking like that, and it's just not really true.
Well, I think a big...
Can you accept an apology that has a home run call in the middle of it?
Well, I feel like that shows awesome. His professionalism
somewhere. Yeah. That was the best apology of all time.
It's like his instinct.
You know, my heart really goes out. This is not who I am. A man of faith in Castellanos hits a line drive out to center field. That's a home run. Again, I'm sorry. I might never put these headphones back on. Have a good day. Like, is that a sincere apology? Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is that a sincere thought?
I think that they should have pulled him, and they should have pulled him for the game, I think, and let somebody else announce it on their own. They've got to have a sit-in, right?
Yeah, they did. He got replaced, but as before he left from getting replaced, that was his apology, which included a home run call.
Yeah, that was you've got to address it, and whoever is producing that event should have pulled him, should have made the call to be like, hey, man, we're going to... It's no different as, pulling somebody out of the game. I mean, guys can get thrown out of the game. Do umps get thrown out of the game if they get injured? Or, you know, who makes that decision? Who umps the umps? You know, who...
There's a funny blooper. Well, it's funny. It's kind of tragic. It was, I don't know if it was Korean baseball or a Japanese baseball league. An umpire took a foul ball straight into the nuts.
Yeah.
And you saw him go down. They carted him out of the field. Couldn't walk out of there. I guess they got to replace him. They got to have understudies and stuff. But yeah, that's a good question. Who umps the umps?
I feel like they'll have a spare ump, but I feel like for announcers like Tom, there's not a ton of them out there that they might have just one backup, but if both the guys went down, I think they would be struggling to find two more guys to replace those two. Like, you know, if they would have caught somebody else responding back to whatever Tom was saying, if both guys were pulled in the game, I mean, I don't know. That kind of goes back to how the infrastructure of the Reds – I mean, I just think a lot of these companies don't really have very many qualified backups.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you don't expect that kind of thing to happen. So you'd think, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll make it through.
You know, all that being said, I do think that that what you're talking about, and I think that this topic in general is as divisive as anything else is in our country right now. Because I do think that a lot of people that are behind Trump, or at least were 4 years ago, are like, I don't want people policing what I can and cannot say. And to an extent, I agree with that. It's like you know, Zach, you talked about comedy podcasts you listen to. Some of the old school comedians are like completely defeated by the political correctness of this. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Bob Saget on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, and he's just like, I don't even know how to make jokes, and it sounded like it's like, you know, like his dog had just died, like, or like it's like, you know, it's just like, I just don't do anything anymore because I don't know what's going to get me in trouble. And who wants that, you know? I mean, if that's the career
comedians
you've
give
chosen,
up.
You need to choose your words wisely, I guess. Yeah. As a comedian, it's a little different because it's like creative expression. But as a baseball player, know how the shit works in front of you. Know when you're on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe don't, you know, I guess the bottom line is you shouldn't be using that kind of language anyway. But, you know, I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but it kind of is. I mean, I don't feel bad for him. I'll say that.
Well, do you think in some ways that what separates like the great comedians from the good ones? I mean, Dave Chappelle and Bill Burr—they're still around. They say controversial things, and
that's their skit.
I mean, is that like just part of their act? I feel like Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle have been thriving with this because they're using that tension, that uncomfortableness, to their benefit and getting away with it.
And that's the magic.
I don't think that Burr has. Neither of them were doing comedy in the '80s like Bob Saget was. That I'm sure that you could dig up some pretty controversial like language that those guys were using in the 70s and 80s. But honestly, some of these guys are going to get to a point where they're like, look, I don't give a fuck what you think about me. I've got enough of a fan base.
Yep.
And if you don't like it, whatever. You're not going to cancel me. Like, I'd be like, because a lot of people can, at the end of the day, a lot of people can still relate to that. And a lot of people, you know, it's like, look, if I'm either going out and 100% marching and speaking out against black or for Black Lives Matter all the time, and if I'm not doing that, I'm a racist, then I'm a racist, because I'm just, you know, you've got to come to terms with what you're comfortable with being yourself. And like Bill Burr's like comedy on, or his monologue on SNL, did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, it's just like, maybe that, you know, it's like half of this, maybe a quarter of this is my crowd, a quarter of this, the other three quarters is just laughing awkwardly. But, you know, he's in New York, and maybe that's, you know, whatever. But really, this shit needs to be said.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there needs to be a pushback on both sides. That's what this whole thing is about.
Exactly.
So I get it.
trying times in America, not just with rampant political correctness, but also the coronavirus. And the NFL right now is experiencing a constant pop-up of COVID-related problems. The schedules are constantly, it seems, being reworked. I don't know how much longer they can do this if there are too many more of these pushbacks on the schedule due to COVID shutdowns.
Check it out.
I know what the Titans and the Pittsburgh have used their bye week. What are you thinking?
What if everybody just took 1 week off, like in the middle of the season, and quarantined themselves, and that was like a universal bye week? Maybe they. What happens if they extend the week and then push the Super Bowl? Florida is planning on having a full-on Super Bowl, which is crazy. This is what you're talking about is not making a good case for that. But I don't. I mean, they travel like that happened in the baseball. It's no surprise to me. I don't. I mean, what was the case made for and against the NBA? Operating in a bubble and the NFL not doing something like that. Too many.
The difference is the NBA it requires far less people.
Okay.
Per team. It was already the playoffs, so the amount of teams wasn't total, and the style of play of the game is such that it's one thing to sequester guys for maybe, 2 to 3 months, approximately, but they're also playing every day, and they get to leave as soon as their team's eliminated. So maybe, maybe the guys from the Lakers, the guys from the Heat, were there that full time. Once you're out, you go home. Mm-hmm. Doing that with 32 teams, each with approximately 50 to 80 people, although I absolutely called for the football bubble, the cost of that, of putting all those guys up in hotels and them just working one day a week versus with no end in sight for,
right,
17 weeks plus. The logistics wasn't there, although I feel like somehow that could have been worked out. But that was the difference. I mean, the NBA's bubble handled the coronavirus did better than like anything else in the country. It seems like zero cases, 152 players, zero cases over the entire span versus all the other sports that aren't bubbleized that have been fucking up. We had an incident close.
I think the NFL.
No, sorry.
If the NFL maybe just stopped training and like had these players just stay at home with their families until game day, maybe that could cut coronavirus cases, that it's just like, we don't need you to be working the other 6 days of the week. Like, and do you guys think there would be like a performance, like if NFL players stopped training, would we be able to see their performance go down? Or
everybody would look like, everybody on the field would look like Randy Bullock.
There is that. And beyond that, like, we're already seeing with like how limited practice has been leading up to the season, how little preparation, training going into it. The amount of injuries this year has been staggering. If you've looked at how many players are getting injured with soft tissue, with hamstring pulls, like I've never seen, like almost like 50% of the San Francisco 49ers roster has been injured.
Do you think they're just going down on the job just to get out of work? Be like, man, I really don't want, I'm going to catch Corona this year if I don't just go down. And then they find a play and just be like, oh, I got a concussion.
It's possible, but I think that'd be like that, even beyond like the level of play of it not being good, is how much more hurt you're going to get. It's like being a wrestler. Like when you're actually in the midst of wrestling, you're just like in a constant pain, but it's not that bad. But it's when you leave for a couple months and come back and then you take a flat back bump again, that's when it like really hurts again. So, during the football season, when you're constantly going through the motions, constantly working out, it's bearable. But like, if you're saying you're going to, take a week off and then go back into without staying at the training, staying in the working, you're A, going to get hurt, and it's going to be a lot less uncomfortable, and you're going to look like shit. So that's the only problem with that. And we missed out. The Colts almost had a COVID outbreak. It turned out to be false positives. So we should be able to see our beloved Bengals. What are your guys' thoughts on the Bengals this season? We've had some pretty inconsistent play, I would say, to put it mildly. We've seen some good, we've seen some bad. And how are you guys thinking? We're about a quarter of the way through the season, a little bit over.
I think they're going to get their new quarterback injured. I don't feel like they're making the right adjustments for their offensive line. The improvements do not seem like they're being made on a weekly basis to me. They don't seem like they're improving at all. The play calling doesn't seem like it's improving at all. The Ravens game was embarrassing. The Eagles game was maybe the worst football game I've ever watched ever. Like, despite them scoring, the fourth quarter into the overtime was like the most pathetic thing, the most pathetic show of like athleticism ever. They were just so defeated. And I feel bad for Joe Burrow. I don't feel bad for AJ Green. I don't know what's up with that guy. I think that younger quarterbacks are making his ass look like shit. And hey man, like, you were out for 2 years, you're injured, like, you're not as valuable as you think you are. Who's gonna pick you up if you leave right now, you know? So
the Patriots, and they'll make him like an all-world
star.
Yeah,
right. Was it like Jerry Rice? Did he go to New England, or he went to Oakland at the end? Like, I guess those receivers do, like,
something like that.
Jerry Rice and
Randy Moss. Yeah, he left the Vikings and he went to the Patriots and had like the greatest.
Yeah. Terrell Owens was in New England.
And Cincinnati.
And Cincinnati towards the end of his career. I don't know. I guess he could. Did you see the interception that was thrown in the Baltimore game where he just didn't make any move on the ball, didn't make any move on the tackle after it was intercepted? So
can't get hurt.
I don't know. I mean,
I will say on that play, I feel like the ball was that was a terrible throw. There's a lot of blame going around. The defense, I feel like, has been improving. There are some good spots. Granted, our entire interior defensive line is currently injured. Defensive line play, I think, is what I've been the most upset with or disappointed in. The defensive line's probably, I mean, on the defensive side of the ball. We'll get to the
defense,
offensive side
the
in
defense,
a second.
I think Baltimore should have beaten Cincinnati by like 50.
Which was why I will say there's some bright spots. Is the defense has been showed like really good last week. I was saying of inconsistency. The defense kept them that game far closer than it should have. Last week was the offense's turn to absolutely look like the worst thing ever. I want to say the Browns, and that was when the defense's turn to look absolutely terrible. Yeah. So I'm saying of inconsistency, because the Jacksonville game, everything looked good.
Yeah.
It's been up and down. The offense is good, then the defense is bad. The defense is good, the offense is bad. You see the Jacksonville game where everything looks like it's clicking, like that team's going to win games. The inconsistency, I think, becomes a coaching problem.
Yeah.
That right there is that. That's when it comes down to a coaching error. The defensive line, the injuries there is making me very concerned. The middle line, the linebacking crew has some. It's been all right. You know, we got a bunch of rookies in there too. They're going to develop. They're coming along. I've seen some good stuff there. The secondary has been pretty good. Jesse Bates is like the highest rated safety in the league right now, like by a wide margin. Things that you don't necessarily pay attention to too much, because obviously the eyes are going to be on the offense more than anything. The offensive line is absolute hot garbage. They got a bunch of bums out there. You got Jonah Williams, who's looking all right. The center, Trey Hopkins, looking all right. But the guards play is just the worst, letting linebackers shoot right through the A-gaps. Bobby Hart, I hear that this is the best year of his career, and that's a sad thing.
Was he drafted by Cincinnati?
Bobby Hart? No, he is one of these terrible trades. If you look at the last decade of Bengals drafts, it's been terrible. That's why we're at right here, because they've had bust after bust. They've drafted O-linemen early, and they've just been terrible. Right. Like, they need to upgrade their scouts. They need to actually have actual scouts in and an actual front office with a real GM.
Well, Zach, that's old news at this point.
I think everyone
knows that.
It could be as simple as starting to call Joe Burrow. I don't think he's tough enough to be a Joe. I don't think he's mean enough. He's still a kid. They need to start calling him Joey Burrow. And I think once the city of Cincinnati starts calling him Joey Burrow and they start rooting, Joey, Joey, that city, the jungle is going to come alive. But that's where you start. Are you going to call Mike Tyson Michael Tyson? I mean, Mike Tyson's mean. He's going to be Mike. You know, it's not Mike Jordan. It's Michael Jordan. He has a softer touch. It's Joey Burrow. Joey Burrow.
You know, Joey Burrow would appreciate that. He prefers Joey Burrow. That's his Twitter handle. I think his, like, parents and family and friends call him Joey. But, you know, it's the media latches onto it. You know, Michael Jordan went by Mike Jordan. The media knew, though. The media knew that you're not Mike Jordan. You're Michael mm-hmm. Jordan. Put some respect on your name. You know, I feel like, you know, in the early going, I've liked what I've seen out of Joey Burrow so far. I think he's going to, you know, as long as he can get some kind of protection and they don't just murder him throughout the season, I think he's going to have a good future.
So Joey Votto's like the oldest guy in baseball, and he's still a Joey. So you run that risk if you never bring the Reds to a playoff win, you never outgrow the Joey. You're just Joey forever.
Yep.
So we don't want that. Joe Burrow, look. If Andy Dalton, if Tom Brady, if Andrew any of these Dalton. Other like
NFL starter,
if any of yeah,
head
no.
quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, Andy
if
Dalton.
If any of these other immobile quarterbacks were getting sacked like Burrow has been sacked, they would probably be injured by now. Aaron Rodgers is not going to take hits like that. Mm-hmm. Andy Dalton is not going to take hits like that. Fitzpatrick's not going to, they're not going to get away. They're not going to scramble as much as he has. And that may be what's going to get him injured.
Aaron Rodgers was a really good scrambler, though. That was part of his, that was part of what made him so great.
But not now.
He can scramble and extend the play. Not
yeah,
now, but he,
yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, you're going to see that less and less now. Like, I feel like the era of the statue in the backfield is gone. Like, I, you know, The one thing I look forward to in the Bengals game against the Colts, you know, I do have some optimism. You know, every team in the league is going to look at the Bengals right now and say, this is our get right game. You know, this is like that you know, in that Bill Belichick line. Yeah, well, we're on to the Bengals.
Yeah,
you know, they lost a game. That's what he said to the media. Is like, we're on to the Bengals. Like at the ultimate put down. You know, the league is looking at the Bengals right now, like the same way they're looking at the Jets, they're probably looking at the Jaguars, looking at the Giants. Like, this is our get right, the NFC East in general, this is our chance to get back on track and pick up a win. That's how a lot of these teams are. Phillip Rivers has looked terrible this year, and he's one of those statues in the backfield that, and you know, I think as long as they can you know, pick him off, and as long as the defensive line can stop Jonathan Taylor from rushing up the middle, like the Browns did all night in their game, I think, you know, we might be able to take this win out. This is going to be the hardest stretch of our schedule right here, right now. We got the Ravens last. We got the Colts. We got Pittsburgh coming up. We got Cleveland again. This is going to be the top. There is light at the end of the tunnel. We get back to the NFC East schedule. We play the Cowboys. How about that? Andy Dalton come into Cincinnati with the Cowboys.
Well, you know what's funny is, so Dalton is a... he's a Texan, so he went to TCU, but I don't think any Cowboys knew that he came back to Dallas. Like everybody's like, hey, you know, they're so fixated on, you know, for whatever fucking reason, they think that this has been my thing with living in Texas, is like, I know what my expectation is for the Bengals every year. The Cowboys fans every year are like, we're going 16-0 just like we went last year. It's like, you went like 7-9 last year. You haven't gone. Dallas has not been a good team in like 25 years. Like
Elliott Smith.
They're not. that much. No, their franchise for the last 25 years has not been that much better than the Bengals.
Yeah.
I mean, but in Texas, everybody treats it like, I just can't believe they're playing like this today. It's like, why? Why can't you believe that? How do you think they've been for the last, like, 5 years? Like, they're not that good of a team. And the, you know, the Prescotts and Ezekiel Elliott. Like, these guys are, they're like 10-year veterans now, like 8-year veterans now. I think they were drafted the same time that Dalton was too, right?
No, Zeke's pretty recent. I think Dak is maybe been about 4 or 5 years.
Okay,
not quite as long, but like they're not rookies. They're not fresh faced rookies by any stretch.
Yeah, I mean you've got only a few years to sort of like make that impression. Maybe that's what it is everybody's just kind of coming off of this buzz of like maybe rebuilding. Who was Dallas's quarterback before Dak?
Troy Aikman.
Dak. No.
Romo, maybe? Was it Romo?
Yeah. And
the current meta of football is basically when you get your, you know, hot stud quarterback, you have about a 4 to 5 year window to maximize their rookie contract. You want to be able to fill up your team and make your playoff run within the first 4 or 5 years. Because if they're really good, at the end of their 4 or 5 year first contract, you're going to have to pay them. You have to pay them a lot of money, and it's going to make building your team after that very hard. So that's the thing that they're fighting with Dak. You know, he held out and is playing on a franchise tag, earning about $30 million this year. Cause the contract that they wanted him to sign, they gave him was for like, he wasn't happy with the amount of years for like $70 to $100 million or whatever. They'll come back, might franchise him again next year because he is that good. He was having an unbelievable start to the season. Granted, they were winning, but I mean, he was on pace to throw
like the Bengals, just like the Bengals. Like, you know, Burrow's doing all right. I mean, I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, for a rookie, I think for a rookie, like literally no preseason, the first time he's on the field, I think he's looked good. The Ravens obviously had their number. He was getting rattled by then. He's been hit an absurd amount of times. That's getting scary. But, you know, if they can keep him upright and give him time to make plays and to get receivers who are open, he makes those plays. He makes good throws. He's doing everything right. It's just he's not getting the help he needs. He's not getting the protection that he needs to succeed. There's only so many times you can scramble out of the pocket before you're having to throw it away. And, you know, granted, he needs to do that a little bit more. He can't be taking as many hits as he does. But at the same time, that's what you want out of him. You want him to be an improviser. You want him to get out, extend plays, find the open man, and make the play that saves the game and gets you downfield. So they're in a perilous position right now where they got to protect him in some way or other. Even if it takes that you run way more than they have and Mixon takes the one getting the beating. You have to. Like the potential upside of having Joe Burrow as your quarterback over the next 4 to 5 years is the most important thing. You have to maximize the next couple years out of this guy or else it's going to be just, you know, the same cycle.
Do you think these new quarterbacks, these rookies sometimes coming right out of college, like although they're getting paid all this money, do you think like how hard these NFL players hit that after the first couple games that any of them ever question their like career choice? That like by the third game, like Burrows is getting so beat up that he's like calling mom being like, mom, I just don't know if this is right for me, you know?
Well, these guys are absolute like alpha, most competitive people in the world type thing. It took Andrew Luck a couple years to reach that point. That's a good comp for what we're seeing with Joe Burrow. We don't want, I mean, granted, the worst thing would be David Carr for the Texans a couple years ago. He's the one that got absolutely battered into oblivion. But, you know, you gotta worry about the Andrew Luck where, like, he liked getting hit. He wanted to fight for those extra downs. He wasn't afraid of the line, but he ended up with broken ribs, lacerated kidneys, concussions, all the like torn up shoulders, all these things that at the end of the day, it was like, even though he loved to play football, he loved being a football player, it just ended up being not worth it. And even at his prime, he stepped away and turned away from millions of dollars because it's just he was hurt and he didn't want to do it anymore. He didn't want to take that beating.
This is a slow song. If you have girlfriends and boyfriends and boyfriends and girlfriends and dog friends and such, you gotta dance. This song is called Short Vine Steppin'. All of them shiny, yeah. Right.
talking about paying these players, what do you think about college athletes getting paid? What are you guys' stances on paying college players? Because they're vastly underpaid, in my opinion.
I think it's overdue.
Relative to what college players are a part of in a multi-billion dollar industry that makes these universities millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, with coaches that are oftentimes the highest paid public, you know, public employees in a given state, and they're and all the players get in recompensation is some books. That's what you're paying these people that are making billions of dollars. You're saying, hey, come in here, break your bodies, and here's some books.
I think it's overdue. If there's one thing that this summer has sort of taught us, it's like, you know, everything, for me at least, I feel like everything is getting a close. Everything's under the magnifying glass right now, you know, like or microscope rather. So the like universities, just like when we going into the fall semester, whatever, enrollment's down, and enrollment's just down in universities. Like what am I going to pay you $30,000 a semester to go to online classes? You know, like the racket that is college universities is really being seen for what it is right now, and finally starting to get challenged in that way. And what it is like a business presenting itself as some sort of institution that you should be privileged to be a part of when really you're just paying to be there. So the role that these athletes have had in this and being like as complacent as they are, one could, I guess, make the argument by being a college player, you know, what is the percentage that gets to go on to the NFL? 5%?
About maybe 1% of 1% make it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of college.
So that's not
the
a
average
case.
Salary in the NFL, right, it's very rare that you're going to actually, you know, the average time in the NFL is maybe like 2 or 3 years. The average salary is probably about $250,000, maybe probably even less for like the practice squad guys and stuff. And that's what, you know, even like the best college player that you could see might not turn out to be anything in the NFL.
I think there needs to be a lot of college reforms, but I think even like students should be getting paid. I think these graduate professors, like in these master programs and stuff, are stealing a lot of ideas from students. And like these professors go on to write these books and like all these big changes. And a lot of times the ideas are just come from these students when they're grading their papers and stuff. So I think students need to fight for a lot of their rights in colleges. But I think like a way to pay athletes is, I almost think they need to separate sports from the colleges and just start having kind of like a minor league program in bigger cities. Where, like, you know, there would just be the
Louisville.
You don't even have, if you're good enough to play football and you're good enough to be part of the Louisville Cardinals, but it's not the University of Louisville Cardinals, it's just the Cardinals football squad in Louisville. And if you're good enough to play, you don't have to go to college to be part of the team, and you get paid. And a lot of athletes that go to college, they could still play on that team. But it would just be separate from the university and be more like a city-funded thing. Because, like, you know, the Yum Arena, like, people in Louisville are paying all these taxes on the Yum Arena downtown to build up downtown. And it's like that money funnels to the university. And it's like Ramsey and shit, all these people on the board of trustees and stuff at U of L are just as crooked as Greg Fisher and all this shit. I mean, like, just think of all the scandal with Rick Pitino and stuff. There's a lot of money that taxpayers are paying into these universities, and then the students that are playing these sports aren't even getting paid. And I just think it should be like how our government's separate church and state. Maybe sports should just be separate from your university. You're there to learn, and if you're there to play sports, you should be getting paid as like a other organization that's not attached to the school, and then go get it drafted into the NFL.
Like,
why do you have to get good grades to play sports? I mean, there's probably a lot of athletes that, like, you know, just can't get it together enough to be that student, and these professors and coaches are picking and choosing. I think we would see better athleticism in these sports if you could just, you know, be anybody and walk out on the field for tryout day, and I bet you'd have some faster runners that maybe couldn't get a 17 on their ACT, but by God, they're fucking faster than those college fucking preppy douchebags.
I think that's a weird precedent, though, because what you're essentially saying is like, well, actually, in a way, you know, it's like, you know, what are the, let's be honest, if somebody is like really good and gifted at sports, and they end up at some big university, you know they're not, you know, you already know they're not going to class. What you're saying to just completely, let's just eliminate this whole like facade of them actually getting an education, and just at a young age be like, look, you're really not that smart. So we're not going to pretend that, we're not going to pretend if you're a 12-year-old, obviously a gifted athlete, we're not going to pretend for the next 10 years to like groom you
and pass you off every
year as an actual student when you're, there's no fucking way that you're making the grades that, you know, you really, I mean, it's rare that you can have both. It's like, you know, what is like, Fitzpatrick's like arguably the smartest player in the NFL, but pretty far from the most athletic in the NFL, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's the position so, he plays, too. Like, a quarterback has to be pretty smart in some ways.
So,
but these kids could choose to go to school and still be and part of the team.
Like removing the whole, like, system of how this is operating now is like, all right, he's obviously not going to be good at, you know, school, so let's just, like, get him his GED in the eighth grade and send him off to train for football.
I think it could just start. Yeah, it needs to start on a more basic level that maybe grade schools shouldn't even have a basketball team. I mean, it's school. We're done with extracurricular activities because we're in the age of Corona. And if you want to go play basketball for AAU, or, you know, build up, you know, community sports instead of playing for Highlands, you play for the Fort Thomas team. And they, I guess it would have to start from, like, youth programs, because I guess that's how some ways sports is all organized. But I'm more saying on, like, the collegiate level, just I'm not comfortable with all this tax money always being going to the university, and then they're building these giant stadiums when my tax dollars could go better into some type of community development to get drug addicts off the streets or something. If sports were privatized and anybody could be on the team, there'd be a draft just like the NFL. Like, maybe the NFL could own this whole, it's like how baseball has a minor league. Maybe the NFL gets with the NCAA and makes some negotiations, and they're like, you know, sell us all your arenas and we'll take the brands of the teams, but these players no longer are affiliated with your school. They're affiliated with the brand of, you know, the Buckeyes for Ohio State are still the Buckeyes, but the school no longer has much to do with it. It's just like, you know, some other organization pays these athletes and they don't have to go to class. They're just from Ohio. They got drafted to Ohio to be a Buckeye, and it doesn't matter if they go to class or not. And they could be part of the school and do the sport, but I don't know. I feel like that might be the quickest way to pay athletes.
There's this, I mean, there is, especially now, this sort of, you know, facade of, like, the professional sports giving a shit about, like, philanthropy or, like, academia or anything. But I like the idea of, like, let's just throw this whole idea out and treat this and see this for what it actually is. It's a fucking business. Like, and that goes, you know, and that begins on, like teachers or coaches grooming these kids as, like, high schoolers. Like, that influence goes all the way down to the college level, which goes down to the high school level. So I'm on board with something like that. I think that these kids should be getting paid. You know, I didn't have the true, like, college experience, and that was really, like, half by design and half by chance. But looking at it, like, and I told you guys this before, looking at it, like, you know, 10 years later of when I probably would have graduated high school, I'm sorry, college, I don't necessarily feel like I would have been better off going through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my opinion on that still stands, and most of my friends that I feel like that did spend a lot of their money and they're still paying things off in college see it as a racket unless they're hyper specific about what they wanted to do then, and they're still doing that now. But for the most part, I feel like most of my friends that went to school and went to college, like, didn't actually get into a career of actually the things that they were studying, and now a lot of them are just sitting with a lot of debt that they'll, you know, it's not a huge amount of debt that they'll be carrying for the rest of their lives, but some people, in, you know, that come to mind, like, could be carrying it into their 40s, and that has an effect. So mine's less so about the sports and more so about the, like, institution of college being seen for something that it's really not.
I think it would take reform.
I think it's no surprise to me that they're you know, exploiting college athletes in the way that they have been since the beginning of time. So
there you have it. Let's pay these student athletes.
Don't know.
out of here, I have a couple last questions I'm going to ask you guys. Are people who don't return the cart to the corral just the worst?
No. I don't care. I don't think it's that big of a deal. The store, the HEB that I go to, we have, like, they're pretty active in there. I don't know. Like, be decent. Don't, like, just like anything else, you know, it's a courtesy. Like, put it out of the way, you know.
Have you ever thought, like, I'm giving somebody a job? Like, if I leave this cart here, I'm giving somebody a job. I'm kind of paying it forward. But if I put the cart back...
It's like throwing trash on the ground. Like, I don't care. Somebody else will pick it up. They're getting paid to do it.
It's like if you were in school, would you just, like, throw paper on the ground? Like, oh, there's a janitor.
No. The janitor only...
He's the janitor of a job.
The janitor could have a better job if he didn't have to do that, you know?
Yeah. Come on, you know, I think you've never been somewhere and like pissed all over because you didn't like the establishment. You know, on the journey, didn't somebody shit on the toilet seat?
I think that happened. Yeah, that sounds like something someone.
Are you going on the record for who it was?
I wasn't there.
I wasn't either. You don't have to. We won't put.
Yeah, it's fine. We'll keep it confidential. We don't need to throw anyone under the bus. Okay. Are couples who don't have, like, a designated side of the bed weird?
I don't have a preferred side of the bed, but Lindsay does. So I don't really think, I feel just as, like, indifferent as I do about the last question. I just don't even really think about it. I feel like, every single night come to bed later. So she's in the further spot, which would be considered the entrance to the bed. But you can walk around the bed. So I don't think it's that. I mean, what do you have on your bedside that is like, you know, you have like your cigars and like a flask of whiskey, and Mary's got like her like knitting. Just, you know, like what, you know, she like knitting with her. With her glasses on, and she's like got like a bottle and like a pacifier there. I don't conform to these, you know, roles, these marital roles, Zach. I don't. Do you? I mean, do you? Where are you?
So I'm closer to the window. I like it a little cool. I like to be a little cooler. I feel like the window's a little cooler, and that's where my dresser is.
Mm-hmm.
So it just worked out that way that I prefer being close to the window. There's a little more of a draft there. I like to be a little cooler when I
sleep. I mean, you know what it is, man. I think the way that Lindsay and I see it is really, it's just first come, first serve, actually. Okay. But if we had a window, which we don't by our bed, I would absolutely be by the window smoking cigars all night while she's trying to sleep.
When you guys shower, do you guys like scrub your feet, or do you just let like the soap and like stuff on your body just wash down, and that's how your feet get cleaned? Ed,
How does this have to involve? Like, are we talking about athlete's foot again? I thought this was a sports section.
We already know you pee on your feet. We just want to like do you?
We already know you pee on your feet. Do we need to take a break?
death. I went in with my arms swinging, but I heard my own breath. I had to face that I'm still living. I'm still flesh. No end. My face is red. My blood.
These guys talk about it all the time, and it's just as like a divisive of a thing. I personally, I would say once a week, wash my leg. Every other time, I just let the soap kind of run down, and it takes care of itself. You know, but if I'm in shorts and I've been like cutting the grass or something, I'll get down there and get into it. I don't mind. I like washing my feet. I don't wear shoes usually around the house. So my feet do need some attention.
Well, there you have it. There you have it, sports fans.
There you have it, sports fan.
Leave the car wherever you take it. Sleep wherever you want, and wash your feet once a week.
Yeah.
words. Words mediate our existence, stand in for the external world we share, and make it possible for us to connect and relate our interiority to others. Words rise and fall, and seem to take on a life of their own at times, coming in and out of vogue at a passing whim. I want to take a moment to speak in favor for a word that connotes negatively in our common parlance, the meaning of which is far more crucial to us than most of us would like to admit. I speak of distraction. While supping from the poisoned font that we call social media, I once noticed an errant post from a distant relative or acquaintance complaining about an athlete or an actor who posited views contrary to that person's provincial life. Perhaps the famous person was calling for an end to racial injustice, police brutality, gender discrimination, economic justice. You know how these things go. But the point they were making was that athletes or actors, artists in general, were somehow less important than we as a society make them seem. That they were undeserving of the millions of dollars they earn for their services of entertaining the millions. That society doesn't even need them. The careless absurdity of these comments took me aback. Is there anything more important in a society like ours than the professional athlete, the actor, the musician? I'm asking that honestly. With each passing day, we are perpetually forced to ask ourselves whether this life is still worth living. As we trudge each morning, like Groundhog's Day, the same joyless routines of mechanized labor, jostled through faceless crowds of endless consumption, feeling the weight of an invisible iron heel pressing ever further into our necks as the world we live in returns to ash before our eyes. As we come to grips with the fact that the real world is in fact a wasteland, where do these people find the gall to question the services of athletes and actors? The big game, your favorite show, the hot new album. These are our escape, our asylum. They're the distractions we need to make life even remotely bearable, because distraction is the only thing we have to make life bearable. We take it for granted, and we should, that all being is being towards death. Then all of life is itself a distraction from this fact. Death is the light at the end of the tunnel. Is the one inevitability that unites us all, the only true democratic institution known to man. The greatest and least among us will be brought low, equally, because Father Time is undefeated. We make plans in spite of our impending deaths. We learn, grow, work, play, eat, drink, shit, sleep, and love, to kill time as we wait for death, to distract ourselves from our eventual fate. So you're gonna die, and all your projects will ultimately be unfulfilled and forgotten in the sands of unlimited time? There's a new Marvel movie coming soon. So the air is poisoned and the animals are going extinct, leading to an overall collapse of the biosphere? Have you checked out that new Netflix show? America is becoming a fascist police state, and your parents are actually racist and support immigrant concentration camps at the southern border, and it's okay because their 401k is doing well? That last T-Swift album was so good, a true return to form. You're too ineffectual to make actual change happen, and will passively stand by making snarky internet comments rather than put shoes to the pavement and place your life on the line to protect everything you claim to believe in? Fourth and goal, baby. What a play. I'm Zachary Dacquery, and that's the good word.